Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Light of Truth broadcast with Michael Boldea.
All right, and that is what they call a cold open. Hello, and welcome to the Light of Truth radio broadcast. I am your host, Michael Boldea. And yes, this is a live broadcast. Finally got to doing one of these. So yes, we are live. I am in studio, even though I am running on fumes. I've been up since 2 o'clock in the morning, it was a struggle driving up here. It's about a 20-25 minute drive, but I knew that some of you would be listening, and so I thought I'll do it, because when you commit to something, well, then you have to follow through. So as always, thank you for joining us. We have a lot of things to get to. Some things that we were talking about last week that seemed a little murky have a little more clarity, which of course is the whole issue with this coronavirus thing. Apparently it's we got a little more information on it. It was just starting to spill last week. And things have escalated quite abruptly since then, because as of about an hour ago, the World Health Organization declared a global emergency over this virus from China. If you remember last week's broadcast, or if you listened to it post-airing, I guess is the best way I can put it, you might also recall that I said it all depends on what the mortality rate is from this thing, how quickly it can spread or how quickly it will spread. But from the telltale signs that the Chinese were putting out, which is basically quarantining an entire city of, what, 12 million people, I knew that there was more to this thing than they were letting on. Since then, apparently, it has spread. The cases have spiked tenfold. And as of yet, as of now, as of this airing, it's still mutating, and this is the thing that scares professionals and also frustrates them. They can't pin it down. It's mutating, and I read this because it popped up on my local news feed. The first human-to-human transmission of the coronavirus in these United States has been documented up the road a ways from where I live in Illinois. So it's here. Now, thankfully, and I say thankfully, you know, with the requisite, I guess, parentheses that, you know, no lost human life is something to be thankful for. But they say the mortality rate is somewhere around 2% rather than the 5% they were batting about. Again, this is still in the early stages. It is still mutating. And the international reaction to it, as well as the Chinese reaction to it, makes me a bit skeptical. It makes me, well, let's just say it causes me concern, because a lot of countries have grounded flights to China. Individuals that were supposed to be transported back home are now being kept on an air base. So, again, I know that we were raised, at least since I've come to this country, I was raised, you know, to believe what you were told by people in government because they wanted the best for you. But somehow, you know, if you tell me I have nothing to worry about, yet you're doing all these things that are cause for alarm. You're doing all these things that are cause for concern. I'm going to be skeptical about your assessment regarding not having anything to worry about. So this is where we are as of right now. About an hour ago, this came out, and the World Health Organization declared the outbreak sparked by a new virus in China that has spread to more than a dozen countries as a global emergency Thursday after the number of cases spiked more than tenfold in a week. This is from the Associated Press. So, you know, I guess it's real news, if you want to call it that. I'm skeptical of anything I hear nowadays, but you take everything with a grain of salt and you present the information that you have and you go from there. But the reason this is spiking, the reason this is, by what they're saying, getting out of control, because when something spikes tenfold in a week, you know that this is only the beginning. There's a latency period of about 2 weeks where there's no symptoms and people can still transmit it. So for 2 weeks, a person cannot realize something's wrong. For 2 weeks, a person cannot realize that they're ill or that they're feeling bad, and yet transmit this to other people. So even 2% is a hefty sum when you look at the total global population. And I'm not, again, if you know me, if you've known me for any amount of time, you know that I'm not a fearmonger. I know it sounds ironic given the ministry that I helm, but I'm not a gloom and doomer. If God gives a message, we present the message. This is what we've done since the inception of this ministry. The first message that we received for this country was that judgment was coming, but I won't just sit there week after week, day after day, and just repeat the same thing. We know judgment is coming. All right, what do we do until then? So I'm not one of these people that has made a niche, let's call it micro business, out of scaring people into buying multivitamins and potatoes au gratin. I've never tried to sell you anything. I will never try to sell you anything because that's not what my calling is. And I don't think anyone's really called to merchandise the people of God. I think they see it as a niche market and they exploit it. And I don't like people who exploit believers, because believers are the kind of people that want to see the best in others. And sometimes, if not most of the time, that's taken advantage of. But we still have to discuss this because it has escalated. If it would have died down, if it would have been isolated to China, then it would be a story that was more prevalent for the Chinese. But like I said, the first human-to-human transmission on U.S. soil has been documented in Illinois. Illinois is an hour and a half drive from me. Now, the woman who contracted the coronavirus last week transmitted the virus to her husband, officials with the Centers for Disease Control said. She is a 61-year-old woman. I'm not going to, you know, say that she has passed when she has not. So it's not past tense by any means. She is a 61-year-old woman, and she is being treated in isolation to control infection at St. Alexius Hospital in Hoffman Estates. I know where Hoffman Estates is, driven through it. She returned from Wuhan, China in mid-January. So lest my memory fail me, today is January the 30th. She returned from Wuhan about 2 weeks ago. And she finally realized she was symptomatic and she went to the hospital. But for all of that 2 weeks, she could have transmitted this virus to anyone she came in contact with. So this is not something to brush off, I don't believe. Like we spoke about last week, you know, some things you can brush off, some things you can shrug at, some things it would be good to discuss just so that we realize, you know, the world isn't the safe place we hoped it would be. And there are many, many things in this world, from pestilence to war to disease to something like this coronavirus, that could wipe out a good portion of the Earth's population, send every economy into a tailspin. Right now, airline industries are voluntarily canceling flights to China. And if you know anything about the airline industry, they don't like losing money for no reason. So the husband, who's also in his 60s, is being treated at the same hospital as his wife. He started showing symptoms 2 days ago and was immediately hospitalized. He does have an unspecified underlying medical condition, but his condition has been stabilized and is being treated also in isolation. He did not travel to China and has not been to any mass gatherings, officials say. He was already being monitored and tested after his wife came down with the virus. This development is something we have been prepared for, said a doctor for the Chicago Department of Public Health. So it takes between 2 and 14 days to develop the coronavirus. Apparently the patient has been extremely helpful. I'm not going to get into the entire article because there's other things to talk about and discuss. But this is where we are. And so when the World Health Organization declares an outbreak, then you know that it's not some piddly thing. It's not something we can readily overlook. It's not something we can readily brush off. And it's something to be aware of. And as wise individuals, we ought to, I don't know, take precautions. Don't go to mass gatherings. Don't go to public places where you know all kinds of people from all over the world are going to be. Because God gave us wisdom for a reason. I know and I believe God can protect his children. That goes without saying. But we can also take steps to minimize potential exposure to things like this just by being wise. There is no sin in wisdom. All right, I'm not going to go and, I don't know, you know, pick a booger off the ground and eat it just to show my faith. I I'm not going to go and have a poisonous snake try to bite me just to show that I believe I'm not going to die. Because I don't believe in testing God that way. I believe that if a serpent in the woods as I'm walking by strikes at my leg, then yes, God is able to sustain me. He's able to keep me alive, just like Paul and the viper. But I shouldn't go out looking for such experiences, because then we enter a whole different kind of category. So let's read what the World Health Organization has to say about this, and then we will move on to other topics, because I've gotten some correspondence from certain people that are unhappy or at least displeased with the fact that I'm discussing society, that I'm discussing culture, that I'm even discussing politics. All right, I wasn't going to get into this, but I'm going to get into this because it irked me. And the reason it irked me, it wasn't because it was a personal attack. It wasn't. The person was very cordial. But the mindset underpinning what they said is something that I cannot abide, that I don't agree with. I don't believe that because we know what the future holds, the only thing we're responsible to do is sit by and watch it happen. Look, if we're not supposed to participate, if we were not supposed to attempt and engage on every front, then why would Jesus insist that we must, you know, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar? Is that not participation? See, we are in the world, but not of it. But since we are in the world, we have the ability to affect the world as children of God. And the only way that we will not affect the world is by hiding our light under a bushel, is by not saying anything, by not doing anything, by going along to get along, and we see where that's gotten us. Look, we have disengaged from culture, and by we, I mean the church. We have disengaged from society, and we have disengaged from politics. And we see the outcome of having done so. Once we disengaged from culture, a vacuum was created. And that vacuum had to be filled with something. And because the light chose not to shine bright, because I don't know, we surrendered the territory of culture without even putting up a fight. Now we have drag queens reading to toddlers and, I don't know, transgender five-year-olds. You have little children being dosed with chemicals that will forever alter their natural state. And the reason this is happening and the reason it's escalated so fast is because once the church disengaged, once the church said, we don't want to fight this, fine, a vacuum was created. And the enemy saw an opportunity to fill that vacuum. We've also disengaged from society because we have the mindset of, they do what they do and they're going to leave us alone. We've insulated ourselves into little bubbles. We have our own little cliques. And we thought that as long as we let them do their thing, they'll leave us be. And now you have individuals on national television whose only claim to fame is what? Rectal prolapse and non-existent bowel retention due to excessive sodomy, openly mocking anyone who isn't draping themselves in a rainbow flag. Do I need to go any further? I might not, and I know that some of you are going to be reticent to hear the words that I'm going to speak to you tonight, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because, unlike some, I have no handlers, I have nothing to sell you, and I'm going to tell you the truth even if it hurts. Look, they've projected this aura of being the smart ones, the brilliant minds of the 21st century to whom every knee must bow, yet they can't distinguish between a biological male and a biological female. And the reason that they're so vocal in their disdain for normality, for morality, for family, for God, for the Bible, take your pick, is because they know that the Christian has disengaged. They know that Christians aren't going to say anything. They know that Christians aren't going to push back. They know that Christians are just going to go on about their day. Because somehow, for some reason, Christians have been convinced that there is nothing left to do while they're on this earth but just wait it out. Buy some potatoes au gratin off of Jim Baker. Dig a deeper bunker. And wait for the apocalypse. I'm sorry, I can't have an apocalyptic mindset and just focus on that for the rest of my life, because only God knows the when of it. Looking at the world around us, does it seem like we're close? Yes, it does, but it did 10 years ago and 20 years ago. So we keep going from decade to decade, from year to year, not doing anything, not engaging, because we believe there's no time left, because this is it, that's it. But if you only have a day, then you only have a day. You can still do something that day. Honestly, are we supposed to just sit and wait for the end and do nothing until it comes? You tell me. Are we supposed to just rehash the same old things and walk the same well-worn patch of dirt until finally what we've been saying for the last 30 years comes to pass? No, we can chew gum and walk at the same time. Or at least I hope we can. We can pray and wage spiritual warfare, but we can also make our voices heard. We can also speak up. We can also stand for what's right. We can also call abomination abomination before it's so deeply rooted that anyone who disagrees with it gets depersoned and deplatformed, and banks are no longer willing to have accounts with them. So, thus far, the church is disengaged from culture. We have disengaged from society, and we've also disengaged from politics. And I know politics is a dirty word. I hate the word politics. But because the church has disengaged, because we've adopted this laissez-faire, whatever will be attitude, you have bills being passed in states where it's legal to murder a crowning baby, or worse still, let a viable baby die in a tray somewhere just because, well, it's an inconvenience. And because we've allowed it to grow for so long, because we've been silent for so long, pushing back has become hard. Because, see, once the enemy fills the vacuum, it's filled. It's no longer an empty void. And so now what you have to do is take what has been placed in the vacuum out and refill it with something better. I hope you understand the point that I'm trying to make. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say, because I'm going to keep saying it. It would be very easy for me to sit here week after week and just tell you my grandpa's testimony all over again. Tell you the vision for America, tell you about the judgment that's coming. I'd have to put no thought into it. I can wake up from a dead sleep and recite his testimony verbatim because I repeated it 3, 4, 5 nights a week for 10 years. But I cannot adopt the mindset that this is what it is, there's nothing we can do, might as well let it happen. I cannot adopt that defeatist mindset. I cannot go down that road. I'm sorry, I can't. Well, God said it was going to happen. Yes, but he didn't say that we shouldn't be doing anything until it happens. If you standing in front of an abortion clinic saves the life of one unborn child, you've saved a life. If you going to your local, I don't know, school council and protesting the idea that a man dressed in a wig and a dress is going to come and read stories to your child and have tickle time with them keeps that person from doing it in one school, then you kept a handful of children from potentially being scarred for life. If you can speak up and actually expose the insanity of transgenderism in 5-year-olds, and it keeps one parent from pumping chemicals into their child, and that child grows up either the boy or the girl that God intended them to be, then you've positively affected the life of that one child, and that's a big deal. I love the fact that we're always talking about nationwide revivals, global revivals. We like it big and bombastic. But you remember the parable of the shepherd who left the 99 to go after the one, because the one matters. Understand that the one matters. If you're standing out in the cold in front of an abortion clinic with a sign saying that heart beating inside of you is a human being, there are options. And one confused girl, woman, whatever, afraid and just uncertain of her future, sees that sign and comes up and says, what are those options? Then you say, there's adoption. There are families that are willing to take your baby and raise it as their own. You don't have to kill it. You don't have to have blood on your hands. You don't have to become a murderer. There's even families that are willing to financially support you to raise your own child. Even keep the child until you're on your feet. If you have addictions, until you break them. But instead of doing any of that, we just wait for the end. There's a train a-coming, brother. Yes, yes, there is. And we may just be hearing the whistle afar off. But time is a precious thing. And we are told to redeem the time. This morning I prayed from 2 o'clock to 7 a.m. And you know what? Perfectly fine to take a break, go stand outside of a clinic, and try to lovingly talk a potential mother out of murdering her unborn child. You could wage spiritual warfare, standing in line to go vote so that ghouls and monsters don't gain power and make it perfectly legal to snuff out the life of a viable baby. You can do both. You can walk and chew gum at the same time. But I think we need to stop shrouding our cowardice in self-righteousness just for a second. Some of us need to admit, if only to ourselves, that the reason we're just sitting idly by and whittling our thumbs is because we're cowards. Is because we're afraid that someone from work or a neighbor or someone from our kids' school might see us standing outside of that abortion clinic and, well, what would they think? If cowardice is our standard, then we've already lost. Because those that continue to extol the virtues of darkness aren't fearful or cowardly. They proudly prance around in the light of day, yelling out their abortions, telling all who would hear that they practice vile lifestyles. We all know that old saying, if we keep doing what we've always done, you'll always have what you always had. If we continue to be silent, the darkness will expand. It will grow. And I think we've seen that the darkness will not stop at the doorstep of the church, unless the church fights back the darkness. I fear the day when many will stand before God and in their minds they were perfectly justified in doing nothing. And they will be called by God to give account for the time that they wasted, for the opportunities that they squandered, for choosing not to do something that they could have done to perhaps save just one life. I'm a realist. I don't dream of changing the world. It's not within my ability to do. But what is within my ability to do is at least try to save one life. And once one life is saved, go on to number two, and then three, and then four. And by the time you know it, you look back on all the times you chose to stand. You look back on all the times you chose to speak. You look back on all the times you chose to act. And you'll realize just how much time you had to work. Yes, the end is coming. It's coming for us all. Sooner, later, it's coming. Judgment is coming. Sooner, later, God knows. But you have today. You have this moment. You have now. And you will be called to give account for it. I don't remember the exact number, but there was a man who saved close to 700 children from being gassed by the Nazis throughout the ordeal. That man started with one. He didn't save 700 children in a day. He didn't save 700 children in a week or a month or a year. He began with one. And then he went on to two. And by the time it was said and done, the number was astronomical. I'll look it up and let you know next week. But I think it was close to 700 Jewish children that this man saved from the gas chambers. And it began with one. You see, because the enemy loves to whisper in your ear, what can you do? And it's not worth putting yourself out there. It's not worth exerting yourself. It's not worth going out and standing in front of a clinic or going out to vote or whatever it is. Because things are never going to change anyway. You're just one person. What can one person do? Well, apparently save 700 odd children from being murdered. That's a life worth looking back on with a sense of accomplishment, isn't it? And it began with one. Never underestimate what one person can do. Because if one person could save 700 children, then they've set a benchmark. You know that it's possible. 700 is possible. It's been done. And I'm not saying try to beat his record. But you know that it's a possibility that you will reach that number, if not exceed it. So begin with one. Those of you that know me know that I tend to lean towards the husky side. I have since I was young and I first discovered, hamburgers in America. And each time I feel myself getting to that point where I realize I need to lose some weight, it always starts with one. One less meal, one day, one extra lap around the block. And if you repeat that one consistently, you begin to see results. And as you begin to see results, you become more committed to that one. You see, the reason some people put themselves out there over and over and over again, the reason they'll go stand outside a clinic with a sign over and over and over again is because they've experienced that one, or know that it is possible to experience that one. I'm sorry, but we can no longer be disengaged. We can no longer be frivolous with time, because we will be called to give account for the time that we've wasted. Don't give in to the cop-out. Don't give in to the excuses. Well, it's all ending anyway. If everyone throughout history shared that mindset, well, it's inevitable, imagine where we'd be. Imagine the hellscape we would be living in today if everyone just threw their hands up, said nothing, did nothing, and let those who thirst for power, who are tyrannical in their acts and deeds and thoughts and words, run roughshod and do all that their wicked hearts desired. We have a long enough time frame to realize that evil always metastasizes. It mutates into something worse. And given enough time, evil desires to devour all. But yes, I know, we're safe in our little bubbles, aren't we? For now. We're safe in our little bubbles. We walk in, we shut the doors, and we're good. Until they come and kick in the doors and take you away. Then there will be no bubble. There will be no safe place. And it will have happened in large part due to your silence, due to your absence of engagement, due to your ability to realize that some choices in life are binary. And there are certain moments when you should take the words of Jesus to heart, that if they're not against us, then they're for us. But instead of doing that, we load up on the stones and we start throwing. And we don't throw the stones at the enemy, do we? Because, well, the enemy might strike back. And so what we do is we start throwing stones at our friends and at those who are doing something and at those who have chosen not to stand idly by and cheer on the destruction of everything because they're too busy fighting the fight. It's very likely that they won't turn around and throw stones back. They'll take the lumps. But they have bigger fish to fry. They have bigger battles to wage. And so just to make ourselves feel better about our cowardice, just to make ourselves feel better about our inaction, just to make ourselves feel better about doing nothing, we keep throwing stones, and we keep throwing stones. And man, some of them connect. And you see the gashes, and you see the bruises, and you see the bleeding. And there's no mercy. There's no empathy. Because while someone is doing the fighting, we're throwing rocks at their head from behind bushes. They're making us look bad. They deserve to bleed. They're making us look bad. They deserve to hurt. They're exposing our cowardice. How dare they? Shut up. Sit there, buy your potatoes au gratin, and wait for the end. And that's where we are. And just as this nation is divided, the church is divided as well. And just as this nation will not stand because it is divided, neither will the church. Because, you see, the enemies of the household of faith are united in their purpose. They desire your destruction. They don't care what denomination you're from. As long as you hold a Bible close to your chest, as long as you insist that there's still something called sin or that there's still something called hell, you are the enemy. Even if you're being quieted, the church mouse, they'll just get to you last. So, if you are one of those people that chooses to do nothing, that chooses to sit by and just wait for the end, the least you can do, the bare minimum that you can do, is stop throwing rocks and stabbing at those that are actually doing something. Because it's getting tiresome. I'm exhausted. And every single person that I know that's willing to stand and fight, to speak, to actually say, hey, we don't have to go quietly into the night. We don't have to cover up our mouths and nod our heads when they say that there's 73 genders. Every single person that I know who's taking a stand, risking their jobs, risking their reputation in their community, risking their livelihood, their ability to go deposit a check. Every single person is exhausted. And it's not from the fight. Because if you've been in the fight long enough, you've seen that we're making headway. If you've been in the fight long enough, you've seen that we're having success. And that only emboldens us to fight more. What they're exhausted from is being stabbed in the back. What they're exhausted from is having rocks thrown at their heads by people who call themselves brother, by people who call themselves sister. That's what's causing their exhaustion. So the next time you pick up a stone, I don't know, maybe instead of throwing it, say a prayer for the person that isn't willing to give up, that's still willing to fight, that's still willing to go and stand in the snow with a sign that says, every life is precious. I don't know, maybe if you're not too busy, you know, clicking away on Facebook and whatnot about how they're giving Christians a bad name, stop by with a thermos of tea. Give them a cup. It'll warm them. They'll be thankful. And because you gave them a cup of tea, you may just share in their reward for having saved a life. Just a thought. I know we started out on something totally different tonight, but here we are. We need to take stock of our actions as believers. And we need to figure out if we're doing more harm than good. We need to figure out if lashing out at those still trying to redeem the time, even though they know the end is coming, that shouldn't stop you from doing what you can today. Yeah, I think we need to take stock. And maybe, I don't know, leave open the possibility that we may be in the wrong. Because if we keep trying to hurt each other while the enemy is advancing, we will be slaughtered. And I'm not one of those people that relishes the idea of self-fulfilling prophecies, where we tell ourselves we're going to be martyrs for so long that we do everything we can to become them. If God wills that I be a martyr at some point in my life, then He will give me the strength to be it. But until that time, what I know with certainty is that God's will is for me to redeem the time. I want to end tonight's program with this thought of one. Because I believe for some of you, it's powerful imagery. And hopefully it's a motivator. Even someone whose desire is to save the world begins with just one. You can't save 7 billion if you're unwilling to try and save the one, especially the one that is unable to defend itself. So here we are. We've almost gone through the entire hour, and we just barely touched upon the topic of global emergencies and viruses and what is it? Oh, impeachment. Yeah, that circus is still going. It looks like it's running out of steam. But again, do what you can do as an individual. The man who saved the 700 children from being gassed couldn't overthrow Hitler. He couldn't overthrow anything. But he knew that he could save one. And one turned into two, two into three, and eventually, what, 600, 700? I understand. It's it helps the ego to have big dreams. But a dream is just a dream until you take steps to make it a reality. And for some people, their big dreams are so big, they're paralyzed at the thought of taking that first step. So don't dream big. Start with one and see where that takes you. All right. Thank you for joining us tonight. I didn't go through any of the stuff I wanted to go through, but this is where we ended up, and I know that it was for somebody. So may God bless you. May God keep you. Thank you for listening. Hopefully we'll see you all next week. And until then, Gino, if you've got anything to say, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mike. Well, I think biblically it's so important to realize, like Mike said, leave the 99, go after the one. And I think sometimes we feel the big ministry, you haven't accomplished anything until you have the big calling or the big meeting or the big ministry. And, you know, when Dimitri came to America after being just greatly tortured, when he went out and started traveling, he was concerned about the one lost soul, the one hurting person, the one church that needed to come back to God. Our ministry started on that level. And, you know, don't despise small beginnings. God says that. And I can't agree more. I think Christians should realize if you go to an abortion clinic and you oppose abortion and you stand there on behalf of those kids and one life is saved, I truly believe that's critical. And our mindset really needs to change. I've heard many people sometimes in ministry say, well, I don't feel I've done anything for God unless it's some big work or big, you know, think about Stephen. He was stoned and put to death as a testimony of a faithful martyr by who? Saul consented to his death. And his ministry goes on by one man standing for God, for the faith. And you can read a lot of accounts in the Bible where Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Esther, Mordecai, and many stood for the faith. Moses and many, Job and Noah. And God works with obedience. When we're obedient, the little things will give us more. So with that, we will say goodbye. God bless you. Thank you for listening to the Light of Truth broadcast.